You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to the 602 Club, as well as Aggressive Negotiations, because that's right, it's time for another fantastic crossover here between both of the shows, because, well, your hosts are lazy, and I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as always, is the amazing and astute Jedi Master, John Mills.
Was it lazy when they paired up aliens and predators? Was it lazy when they paired up Deadpool and Wolverine? No, it was not. It was simply a good idea, Matt. And
I applaud
and celebrate that we have once again joined together in some sort of podcast crossover multiverse event, Aggressive Negotiations and the 602 Club, to talk about a topic which hopefully I think people might be interested in hearing us share our thoughts about.
Yeah, I mean, of course, everybody knows that the latest Star Wars series, The Acolyte, had ended there in July. And John and I honestly just have not really had time to sit down and talk about this together because, in all honesty, the end of July for me was incredibly busy and just hadn't really had an opportunity to kind of get my mind around recording about the show. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Before we do, of course, you can find us all over the place. You can follow both of the shows on X Twitter at the 602 Club or at the Jedi Masters. You can also find us online at our respective networks at Trek.fm or at thenerdparty.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty or Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And you can also find us all over the place on social media under the varied networks as well, at TrekFM and at Join Nerd Party. We're on Instagram as well, at the 602 Club TFM, as well as at the Nerd Party. So all of those places, we would love it if you would interact with us. And, you know, John and I would be remiss if we did not ask you to give some reviews for the shows over on Apple Podcasts. It's been a while since both of the shows, the 602 Club or Aggressive Negotiations, have, you know, had somebody go in and give us some nice words. And so help people find those shows. If you like what we do, we would really appreciate that. And the reason we ask is because it actually still makes a huge difference, the reviews. And so please do that. Okay, John, coming into this show, you know, as with all of the Star Wars shows, right, we're very aware what's coming out. Both you and I are very plugged in to what's going on behind the scenes. And so I think one of the questions I was just, and just for anybody who's wondering, this is going to be kind of a freewheeling conversation. We're going to probably just hop from thing to thing. And so normally you might see chapters in the episode, but I don't really know if we'll have too many of those in the episode, just because I think we're going to be hopping around a lot. We're going to be hitting light speed all over the galaxy. And so
you're used to chapters in the 602 Club, whereas Aggressive Negotiations, it's sort of our bag to be
true.
A little bit looser. And so this is, again, that melding where I think we'll find a middle ground with that.
We're going to loosen it up a little bit here, folks. But so I am really interested, though, coming into this show. So set up in the sense of, they had mentioned the show was kind of going to be a show more about the villains, in the sense that we were supposed to explore the Sith. We knew that coming in. We also knew that this show kind of seemed to have a fighting style in it that was reminiscent of things what you would have seen in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon or The Matrix, you know, that this was going to take place, you know, about 100 years before The Phantom Menace. So I guess coming into it, knowing those things, how were you feeling about the show?
Honestly, I was feeling a little cautious about it, specifically because I think you're really messing around with something potentially radioactive when you wade into something that ties into the lore at that basic level. I mean, this isn't just, oh, I have to make sure I don't kill Lando between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, or I have to make sure that Han has the Falcon by the time we get to the beginning of Star Wars. This is something very foundational that very much was going to inform world building, which had always been implied pre The Phantom Menace, and also been, you know, plenty of hints had been dropped, and there had already been plenty of material that fans were very, very attached to. Now, you and I, we differ very much about the whole, you know, how canon is a book thing and stuff like that. And I have other friends that I talk to, and it's a whole spectrum of how people think about those things. But it was definitely something where whatever you're going to put out had better be so darn good that everybody says, you know, that was worth everything. That was worth whatever you did with it. And it,
right.
You know, I think additionally, it provides a tremendous creative challenge to put yourself in that box,
yeah,
regardless of what era you're in, because you're saying to yourself, well, I know I can't color outside the lines too much because I have to make sure that the Sith are still hidden.
Right, right.
I have to make sure that the Jedi are still powerful. I have to make sure that the Jedi are still at the top of their game because, you know, Lucas himself said, The Phantom Menace, it's the end of the Golden Age. The Jedi are still a number one. And so that's just a lot of balls to juggle. So, yeah, I was a little cautious in my expectations.
Yeah, you know, I think it was interesting because coming in, I felt cautious as well. But I felt like there was room for optimism for me in the sense that, you know, I think the idea of actually following the villains in a show is a pretty interesting idea. So I think the show had that going for it. I also think that the opportunity to kind of get behind the scenes then in their buildup, which we've seen alluded to, obviously, in plenty of things from The Phantom Menace through the Clone Wars series. You know, we've picked up lots of pieces, you know, especially with the reintroduction of Darth Maul into the series, where we kind of even learned a little more about his backstory, all of that, right? So, to me, the field is ready for harvest when it comes to understanding the machinations of the Sith behind the scenes, especially with like a Plagueis in the background. You know, we had the James Luceno book that had been written all those years ago, which was incredibly good. And many people did grab onto as being what they held onto as canon, you know, because the book was so good and played so well into that series. And so, yeah, I felt like coming into it, lots of interesting ideas. I think the other thing I personally was a little trepidatious about, though, is especially seeing the promotional material, trailers and such, I was immediately put off by and worried by just the look of the fight scenes because Star Wars, even through animation, has a very specific type of style in the way things are shot, even in animation, which comport with everything that we had already seen in live action, right? Maybe just slightly heightened. Or, you know, you have the ability to make something feel more grandiose just because, again, you're in animation. It's so much easier to have somebody flip off a building than it would be in live action, right? And so that kind of stuff. And so that I definitely came in already feeling as though that this was starting on shaky ground, if you put it that way.
Well, I get what you're saying about like the book and stuff like for me, even if they had a show and it was like Darth Plagueis wound up being I don't know, like an Ishy Tib instead of a immunist or something like that, like I would have been fine with it. But I think that the following the villains thing was always something where I didn't know if they could commit to actually following the villains. Like, that's a perspective shift that works if it's told from the perspective of the villains, not in the sense that like, oh, well, I spend more time with the villains. I was hoping the show would be literally sitting with the Sith as they worked behind the scenes and seeing them intersect with certain things instead of what honestly wound up happening, which was felt like they couldn't commit to it. I felt like there was that impulse there in the show, but it was still a Jedi show.
Yeah.
It was still, we're going around with the Jedi and the Jedi are doing things. We're going to the Jedi and stuff like that. It's like, that's not the show that I was, that my excitement meter was even registering for. I was registering for, I got two Sith sitting there and they're planning S, and then occasionally they got to take somebody out to keep mouths shut. And we find out how they managed to keep themselves on the DL for as long as they did. That is where I think the show frustrates the hell out of me, is it did not commit to that. And instead I got a Jedi show, which no matter what you do, that is the trickiest of grounds, because no matter what you choose to do with the Jedi, there's no way to, the only way you can do it right is to have it so that it's Jedi themselves out there without ever touching Coruscant, without ever going back there, because that is too, I always felt before the show was too, too much to chew. Too much to bite off. Like, you know, it was way too much to give yourself to do.
Well, and I think, so maybe, again, we're going to be jumping all over the place, but let's just kind of talk, I think it's a great time to talk about what actually happens then in the show when it comes to the Sith. Because, one, it's like they want to dance around the idea of whether or not this character known as the Stranger, which I don't think they're ever actually called in the show. You only learn that if you read, you know, X Twitter or whatever. And we want to dance around, of course, this idea of, you know, whether he's actually a Sith or not, or if he's really an apprentice of the Sith, even though we do see Darth Plagueis, you know, in the show. And then, yes, you're dancing around the whole idea of whether or not people like, you know, Coyote Mundi, now you've thrown a wrench into the idea of, like, that does he know that there's some sort of dark side, something going on out there? And is the middle management Jedi Council aware of this, at least? And does Yoda know? Like, so I guess my question is like, it seems like all of the things that you were worried about, they kind of basically stepped on every single landmine that you were worried they would step on.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because the Ki-Adi Mundi thing is such an unforced error. Because people obsessed over it. You know, I had a person that I work with saying, like, no, it's established that he's X, you know, years old because it said that on the action figure card or whatever. And I'm the Gen X jerkweed that's like, yeah, well, technically the trading cards from Topps back in the 70s said that Luke and Leia were 2 years different in age. So, hey, oops. But like, it's one of those things where throwing Ki-Adi Mundi in there, all it's going to do, that is the one character that absolutely you should not have involved with a Sith plotline at this point in history. It's like you asked for the controversy. Not that it's a controversy, but you asked for the continuity question. Okay, so is this the only time he ever encounters that question and they never come back to it, and then there's more of a cover-up? And I think that is the problem there, is you could have had literally any other character. You could have even had a character that we recognize there. It's just because of his specific sentence about believing that the Sith had been extinct for a millennium, that's, of course, everybody's going to fixate on that. It doesn't mean that I'm dismissing it. I'm not saying the creators were wrong to do it. I'm not even saying I have a problem with it. I'm saying it's a dumb mistake in the sense that you didn't need to raise this question.
I mean, it's an unforced error.
Yes, exactly.
That's really what it comes down to. I agree with you. It just raises the continuity question, and it just makes. I think what it does is it makes the Phantom Menace that there be something in question now in your mind, that doesn't need to be there, especially because it really does seem like in that film, he very much believes that. It never felt like a line that was being delivered as if it was like a wink, like, oh, yeah, we know they haven't been, but and then it doesn't, like, legitimately the fact that Yoda shows up at the very end and is like, mm-hmm. we need to talk, Venestra's like, we need to talk. It's like, okay, how, it really does feel as though by touching Coruscant, like you mentioned, because I think this is the thing, like, we don't love to just go and rewrite things. But there's such an easy way to ameliorate all this and not even have it be any kind of issue in your mind, so you can still have so much of this story play out where it's all just taking place on the Outer Rim and it happens within a week or so, so you're not even aware that it's, the rest of the galaxy is not aware it's happening.
Oh. You know how you tie it up in a bow, in all honesty, is you have whatever final fight's going to happen, and then you have May and whomever else. You have two bodies laying there, and another Jedi shows up with, a scouting party or something, and they say, oh, well, it looks like they killed each other. What do you think happened? I guess we'll never know.
Exactly.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But the thing is, I think where the show gets greedy is it's obviously trying to set up for a second season. And that is the thing that always drives me batty. And this is why I will always give Lucas so much credit in the fact that even with Attack of the Clones, even with The Empire Strikes Back, there is a resolution to everything that happens within the context of the film that it's not. It doesn't feel like, even with those endings where you know something else is coming, it's still resolved enough that it's not a poking the audience in the rib saying, huh? Yeah, something else is coming. All right, right? You want season two, right? That is the greediness of this season that gets under my skin. And I know that there are people who love this show. And I will never, like, voicing a criticism doesn't take that away from anybody. I've gotten complaint from people in the past where they're like, oh, just let people enjoy things. No, I'm just talking about my opinion on it. Feel free to disagree. But I think the show got greedy and it was trying to, it had visions of a series as opposed to just telling a story. And that's where it trips. Even The Mandalorian, each season ends. You could have no more seasons of The Mandalorian after the third, and it's over. It's fine. It's done. You might want more, but it's done. It's not stringing you along. Even Ahsoka, right? They could choose not to do another season of Ahsoka. I wouldn't be happy about it. I'd be a little sad, but I got my coda. I got my wrap up. You know what? If this is all that I got, oh, okay. It's not great to end it there, but okay. I'll live with it. I'll explore it somewhere else. Except for the dangling Thrawn thing. That's the one thing that, I need resolved. But yeah, you know what I'm trying to say here?
I like what you're saying there. And I think, people could be thinking to themselves, oh, but Andor does that. But Andor specifically told them, hey, we're doing this in two seasons, and they contractually are obligated to do two seasons to tell the full story. Like, that was that from the beginning, that was what they were going for, was two seasons to tell the story to get you to the lead up of Rogue One. And so, like, that was a part of the structure, you know, and that was a part of the thought process of the show from the very beginning, right? And speaking of structure, I got to ask you, because this show does the thing that so many shows these days try to do, which is to utilize flashbacks to then fill in what's happening in the present. And I've got to ask you, does that work at all for you in this show?
I will get in trouble if I say more than the following comment. No, it's a mess. And I will fade into the West and remain Kessel Junkie with that one. I think that, okay, fine, I'll get in a little bit of trouble. It does flashbacks completely wrong. I remember we traded text messages after, I think it was the second episode, where the second episode, like, is the flashback one, and it's like, oh, here's what happened in the past. And there's no frame on it. There's no present day frame on either end. Yeah. There's nobody narrating it. It's just there.
It's actually episode 3 where they do the whole
episode 3.
Yeah.
But it feels like they just aired it out of order.
Yes.
It feels like Star Trek the original series was like, well, you know, the fourth episode's actually the one that aired first. So technically, and it's like, wait, what? Why? It didn't flow. It just interrupted the narrative flow of everything. And the show just struggled with that. I honestly think it never recovered from that structurally. It just sort of unspooled from there.
I completely agree. And I will give an example from Star Wars where I have been very critical, where I did not think that this worked. And that is, you mentioned season 3 of The Mandalorian. The structure mm-hmm. of that season was not good. And should have been completely restructured so that you worked in the storyline of what was happening on Coruscant with the Doctor, with all of the other stuff going, instead of it just having it be its own standalone episode. And so that way, each episode, I understand that The Mandalorian set itself up as almost being a Clone Wars-like series where each episode was meant to kind of stand on its own, but then was loosely connected. But by the time they got to season 3, they mm-hmm. were very much telling a more serialized story. And they needed to go to a slightly more serialized format. And they didn't. And it was a mess. It was not great. Now, I will say that season redeemed itself by the end. I felt like it does all come together, and they found a way to make it work. But it wasn't as clean as it could have been. And really, mm-hmm. some simple restructuring of episodes with the storyline would have fixed it. I think the difference that I feel with the Acolyte, it still suffers from all of those same problems. The problem is that when you're doing a perspective show, you need the final reveal of the full perspective to actually change your feelings about the series.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't do that.
No, it does not.
Because the things that we're then seeing is, okay, well, May is still a psychopath for the most part. We basically see Jedi characters getting mind controlled against their will, right? We see a character specifically in Soul who makes it seem like he has to make a decision between saving two characters, when in all reality, why is the Jedi dude holding up two bridges instead of just grabbing two girls that together weigh about 130 pounds and pulling them both to safety? I don't get it.
Okay. That, yes, is that one bends the brain in this sense, that there were other ways they could have structured that where he attempts to save them, but he loses concentration or something and feels great guilt about it, whatever you want to do. But in terms of the mind control part, we know from the very first Star Wars movie ever that the Force can have an influence on the weak-minded. You're telling me that a Padawan, whose greatest character flaw apparently is that he's whining about doing a thing.
I want to go home to Coruscant where, you know, I can get Nerf steak every day.
See, but see, the thing is, this is the thing. This is why probably Mace Windu is my second favorite Jedi after the tie between Anakin. Because I picture if Mace Windu was there, he'd handle it like Patton, where he would just slap the kid and be like, ah, come on, grow up a little bit. I think that that character being weak-minded enough to be mind-controlled, it doesn't make the not Night Sisters seem powerful. It makes a Jedi seem weak.
Well, and let me add to that in the sense that I don't think it makes the Jedi seem weak for him to be mind-controlled. He's a Padawan. Okay. But Cal Naka, the Wookiee Jedi master? Mm-hmm. Like, right. or at least Jedi Knight, you're telling me that like he's susceptible to this? That's the mm-hmm. part that I didn't get.
Well, I think there's also a tremendous mistake where Sol's great conflict is he kills the den mother, the head witch,
sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Right? Because she's turning into. Now, keep in mind, she's mind-controlled, the Padawan, and then she starts turning into mist with her eyes going completely, you know, completely dark, and he reacts to that. And you look at that and you say, well, I probably would have presumed something not cool was happening as well. And she says, I was just going to go hug my child. And I'm like, that in and of itself, if you simply constructed it so that she doesn't start dissolving, but she actually is running over to her child and he misinterprets it as her attacking the Padawan physically, that suddenly makes a lot more sense to me. And that, I know that people will say, hey, why are you being so critical about that? But I shouldn't have to qualify it or quantify it. Like it's one of those things where I see it and I say, there was such an easier way to deal with this, just like the flashbacks, just like other things that happen, where we find out this whole incident is something that's been covered up for a lifetime, basically. It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me that this would be something that would function in this way for as long as it did. If you sold it to me as both of these characters, like it was a year ago, okay. But by the time we get to it, just the structure of everything, motivations get cloudy. Editing decisions are in question for me. And then essentially, I'm still left there saying, I thought this was supposed to be from the villain's point of view. And it's not. It's never from the villain's point of view, truly. Unless you say, oh, well, May is one of the main characters. So it's from her point of view, blah, blah, blah. But it's not really from her point of view. It's from OSHA's point of view most of the time. So it's like, what this show really feels like is that nobody was a strong enough hand on the wheel in the writer's room. I'm sorry, I'll stop.
No. So I like what you said because, you know, the clarity of the situation is so frustrating. And I think this I want to dovetail into something that I was struck by as you were talking about that, because I think it's really the crux of the whole story, which is the lack of clear motivations for characters at any one point in time. And it reminded me of a C.S. Lewis quote where he says, make great pains to be clear. Remember that though you start by knowing what you mean, the reader doesn't. and a single ill-chosen word may lead him to totally misunderstanding. In a story, it is terribly easy to forget that you have not told the reader something that he needs to know. The whole picture is so clear to you in your own mind that you forget that it isn't the same in his. And I think that's exactly what happened in this series. But unfortunately, I think in some ways, it almost doesn't even seem like the writers are all specifically clear on what the motivations for the characters, because it always seems, and I know you're not supposed to use always, but I'm using it here for a reason, because it literally seems like always characters do a thing because it's what the plot requires for the next thing to happen, instead of because of where I, as the watcher, am like, oh, I feel like I'm understanding this character. And all of a sudden, then they just do a like almost complete 180 in the very next scene. And it's like, but where does the motivations for that come from? And so there is such a lack of clarity and understanding of who these characters are. And, you know, you spoke to the idea of the Topps cards having, you know, Princess Leia be 2 years older than Luke, right? It is very clear that there are things that Lucas didn't completely know and was still making up as he went along. Tolkien was the same way in Lord of the Rings. So some of the greatest creators that we've known in the 20th century were making it up as they went along, right? But as we're watching it, we don't feel completely out of left field for things that happened. The fact that Luke and Leia end up being twins isn't like, well, that makes zero sense. I could never see how that could happen. You know, like, no, we can figure out from what's been said how that could happen, right? And we already know that they were raised by different people. I mean, even just the original trilogy alone gives us all of this. And so I think that's the thing that I really struggle with in this show, is because, as an example, I was really enjoying the character Sol at the beginning of the show, and he was my one in. He was the one thing I was kind of enjoying by the show. By the end of the show, I would say they completely assassinated the character of this character, because the choices that he makes make so little sense by the end. I'm like, okay, I don't even like you anymore, and now I like nobody. And that was a really frustrating thing, because I felt like you had me with one character, and because you couldn't be disciplined in your character motivation scene by scene, even in legitimately the same episode, and then compounding that with 8 episodes where that happens every single episode, scene to scene, character to character, I was just like, okay, that's the biggest problem, is really that this show comes down to writing. And I would argue, my perspective is that this show is very poorly constructed, and especially from a character story standpoint, as we talked about, from just a structure standpoint, you put two of those things together, that's detrimental one on its own, but this show has both, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you, because what they did with Sol at the end infuriated me, because it wasn't at all who the character was before that moment. And I'm going to be controversial here. I'm going to go ahead and be controversial with you here, where I'm going to say that there seems to be a personal story told in this metaphorical tale. Now, I'll say it this way. If you look at the prequels, whether he realized it or not, George Lucas was working out his life story in those three films. And I will go to my grave. If I met Mr. Lucas face to face, I would say, do you realize what you did here? This is your life story, but you put Jedi and lightsabers in it. And I am fully convinced that I could make him look at it and say, oh, wow, you're right. I think that there is something here where the the lead producer, Leslie Headland, is working something out with what she's talking about here. And I don't think it's invalid, but I think that it's muddled and it's messy. And as a result, the story doesn't land. A strong ending can make up for a lot of sins. You talk to somebody who isn't nuts about episode one, and they will still rave about the ending, and it ameliorates a lot of things for them because they still loved what happened in that last reel, and they're on board. And they're like, you know what? I didn't like Jar Jar. I didn't like this. But that lightsaber fight and the assault on Naboo and the fight with the droids and everything, they're like, bang, that's what I was looking for. Conversely, if you have something that's a bit of a mess and then you have an ending that does not work, nobody's listening to you anymore. Nobody cares. I think that probably 15 or 20 years from now, people will come back to The Acolyte and say, I get what you were saying here, but it took this long to get there. That, to me, is something that is an inherent flaw with the series, because I think that it was trying to say something important and personal, and it just, because of all of its structural problems, nobody heard it.
Yeah, I think that is incredibly well said. And I think the most interesting thing about this is that we could legitimately go through, if we wanted, we don't, every episode, do a commentary and stop every time that there is some sort of misunderstanding of motivations. Case in point, I'm thinking of one, which is the character Basil, who is a Tynian tracker who showed up in Han Solo's Revenge. I don't know what that's what they call him. Anyway, why is he at one moment hating on May, and the next moment, he's like trying to keep Sol from doing whatever he's trying to do from her in the ship? Like, I think that's just one example of things just not making sense in any way.
Let me jump on what you're saying there. You're absolutely right, because the tracker character is like Chewbacca without Han talking to him. We understand Chewbacca because Han says, yeah, you're right. Chewie's right. Where did you dig up that old fossil? Right? Like, we cannot understand Chewbacca. We need a character with Chewbacca who understands him in his scenes. Otherwise, we're going to be completely lost.
Yes.
Okay? I'm going to nitpick something even sillier with the tracker, and I want to get your reaction to it, actually, is at that part you're talking about where he's subverting what Sol wants to do, or Sol. Am I pronouncing it wrong?
I thought it was Sol, but who knows?
Okay. Anyway, when he's subverting what he wants to do and he's running through the ship, all I could think of that whole time, and I think this speaks to some of the structural issues with the show, was I was sitting there saying, how big is this friggin' ship?
Yeah.
It didn't look that big. And it took like 10 minutes to get from the back to the front. I'm like, what is it, the TARDIS? Mm-hmm. Is it a lot larger in certain parts of the ship than on where I think it is? And it,
that's
like,
a good question.
Those sort of basic problems. And, Ahsoka had problems like that as well. When we talked about that, there were certain editing things where I was like, why is it taking so long to get here? Like when we first, wind up with Sabine and she's going down and it's like, okay, the scenes just could have been cut a lot shorter and a lot faster. And suddenly Lucas saying faster, more intense makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with you there. Can I? We talked a little bit about at the beginning, you know, this idea of the way in which they shot the action, and what it ends up being is saber fu, because it's gung fu, but with lightsabers, and I'm not sure I know if, you know, that really works. And in all honesty, I think the reason I don't think that it works is that it's just too floaty feeling. Like, the action never feels grounded. And that's one of the things I think that when we look at Star Wars action, especially lightsaber battles, even in moments when, you know, you had the lightsaber battles in the Clone Wars, right? There was a real grounded nature to that. And I don't feel like there's a grounded nature to most of the lightsaber battles that are here. Because even in moments where you sense it, all of a sudden then it goes to this kind of like weird, almost weightless feel. And it just, it doesn't really work. And it's frustrating because, it again, it's one of those places where we've talked so much about in the Clone Wars where, you know, the show takes on a genre and then does that genre. So, I mean, I don't think it's a terrible idea to try and do, you know, this type of genre. But it also has to feel like it fits within the Star Wars universe, right? And I don't know, I think there's a way maybe you could have done this, but I just don't feel like they pull it off or are successful.
Well, if you're going to do it, have a character have that fighting style, and then another character can't react to it, which you could argue, and I would argue that when the stranger is slaughtering everybody, you get a sense that the Jedi can't keep up with him.
Exactly, yeah.
That he's fighting in a way that they don't understand. And then there are a couple of Jedi where they're able to adapt and say, okay, I can figure out what you're doing here. I think that the problem with the lightsaber fights, and this is something that I think is possibly a byproduct of people using the volume who don't quite, that have not quite mastered the way to use the volume the way that Greg Fraser has. I mean, Greg Fraser shot the Batman
right
with the volume.
Yeah.
And that feels like you're going through a city.
Yes.
This, there are a couple of key moments where no matter how good the lightsaber fight is, it switches to a long shot. And like when all of the trees get cut down, and then there's all of this fighting that goes on, and it pulls up, and I go, wait, was that only that 20 feet there that happened in? That felt like that was a lot more space. There's some space cheating going on here. And I think that's the issue that the lightsaber fights run across, is the fact that when I'm in the midst of the fight, it feels like I'm covering a lot. It looks like I'm covering a lot more territory than I actually am, as shown in the long shots. And even that is something where we'll solve that by just removing the long shot. And all of a sudden, there's no problem. Right? I think the big climactic one where the stranger is killing everybody, I think it works except for those certain shots there where it suddenly feels a lot smaller than it should. But the visual language is confusing in terms of where everybody is. And then additionally, I never get the sense that people don't, that they're reacting to a lightsaber style they've never seen before.
Right.
That's what the stranger should bring with him.
Yeah. But in the same way that you got that with, Palpatine. That's what they're trying to emulate, is that. And it doesn't work the same.
Well, I mean, Palpatine comes rocketing out like a little whirling dervish and slaughters three Jedi in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the only reason that Mace Windu survives is because Windu's like, oh no, right? And he falls back and is like, oh, okay, I got to adapt the way that I'm fighting right now. Yeah, that's a great pull. You're right.
Yeah.
Palpatine takes everybody by surprise, and then one person is like, whoa.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I don't want to pick on any of the cast specifically, but I would just say that overall, for me, one of the major downfalls of this show as well was that a majority of the cast was not up to what they were being asked to do. I don't know if that's the direction that they're given. I don't know if it's the writing. I don't know if it's the actor. I don't know if it's all of it. But so many of the most important characters in this show, I did not feel like were able to carry the scenes in the way that they were needing to. And in all honesty, I'm not here to blame the actor, because as you've said many times on many shows, and I think it's absolutely right, it's the director who's there to get out of the actor what they want, and to give the actor what they need to do the scene in the way that they feel it's best for the show. And from the start of this show, which was directed by Leslie Headland, who is the writer and producer of this show, and the main, you know, story editor of this show, it didn't happen. And I think that's also one of the things to which it was very frustrating. I mean, case in point, I think casting Carrie Ann Moss in this show was a complete mistake, because she's a detractor, yes, from the series, instead of, somebody that you really attach to. And because we know her too much from her work as Trinity, and she's basically just a version of that, instead of, like, you know, being in, I think she's in the Jessica Jones series, and she basically plays kind of like a side villain in that, and she's incredibly diabolical and great in it. And so you don't see her as Carrie Ann Moss, you see her as that character, right? Because she's not just playing something that feels so familiar to what you've already seen her do. And so that's just a kind of case in point there. But none of the characters, I felt like, for the most part, except for the character of Sol, who I was enjoying his earnestness throughout most of the series, and then it's the writing that really ends up letting him down. I don't think it's his acting, but he's really the only one I gravitated towards in the series at all. But I just felt like everybody else, I'm not connecting in the way you'd want to. And that's really difficult in a show that has this many characters to it, that there was only one that I kind of connected to. And then by the end, I was like, oh, I don't like this character.
Well, I think you're hitting on it there. Character bloat. There are too many characters. I think that if they boiled this down to a Jedi and his Padawan, or two Jedi Masters and one of them has a Padawan, you immediately boil it down. You take it down really to the lowest, leanest possible level. Why does episode one work as a story? There are a lot of characters in episode one, but we are following a Jedi and his Padawan as they go from place to place to place. We have a clear main character set. I never get a clear main character set here. I think Sol is a main character. That's fair to say. But who else is real? I mean, Osha and May should be the main characters. It's sort of set up for May to be the main character, but then Sol sort of takes over. And that speaks to the whole, it's a Jedi story instead of a Sith story. And then the Stranger shows up, and the Stranger is super interesting, but he's not a lead, or is he? Because he takes over for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, you have all of these characters fighting for dominance in terms of being, the one who carries the thread through.
Yep.
And I think that's just why we have our lack of focus here, because at one point, and please forgive me for forgetting her name, but Green Jedi, Bald Green Jedi.
Venestra. Yeah.
Venestra. That's it. Venestra. And she's suddenly the main character at the end? ? Yeah. Right. It's like, who's,
yeah, and one who seems who's to be the most here? Un-Jedi of all Jedi, which
yeah.
I do have, I think, maybe one last question real quick, which is just, David Harewood, who I've known in many things and seen him throughout many things, and always enjoyed him, especially in his work in the Arrowverse, things like that. Him being a senator who is so distrusting of the Jedi already, did that work for you at this, like, 100 years before The Phantom Menace?
It could have, if you had him have a single scene where he's talking with a shadowy figure who's promising him great power and playing into his fears about the Jedi. I think that sells the scene. Instead, it feels more like a setup for season two.
Right. And I think, and the reason I'm wondering this question is because it seems like one of those things to which you're trying too hard to connect to The Phantom Menace, and mm-hmm. you're doing it in a way that feels almost disingenuous to what you're trying to connect to, because even there, we don't see the Jedi yet as being people that people distrust. It's not until, you know, the Clone Wars begin where that really begins to ramp up. At least that's what we've seen in the Star Wars universe in the prequels. We haven't been given the information that a lot of people mistrust them. In fact, what we actually see is that most people in the galaxy, they trust them or they barely knew that they existed because they just didn't run into mm-hmm. one, right? And so this just, I think your quick edit there makes it make so much more sense. And I think it also kind of helps set up the character of Plagueis in the sense that he is slowly already starting to do the things that Palpatine then would then pick up on and mm-hmm. continue. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I like that. So I don't know. I guess it comes down to it, you know, John, if you were to give the Acolyte a rating out of 5 lightsaber crystals that have been bled, what would you give this? And again, jerk. I feel like look, there's so much we could talk about.
We could go on for hours and hours. Yeah. We could go on for hours and hours, but there's no need to. If you love what we said, we appreciate it. If you hate what we said, just keep in mind, it's just two people talking about their opinions about something. Okay? That's all this is. If I'm being honest, and it hurts me so bad, because we spent a lot of time talking about what did not work. Lee Jung-jae as Sol, until the writing betrays him, I thought it was a sublime performance. Loved him. Thought he was great. The stranger, forget the actor's name, I thought he was awesome. And boy, Arm Day just became really a thing in my life after seeing him in his costume.
Nothing like Smylo Ren.
Yeah, I love Smylo Ren. But that's the thing, is like, I would actually get that action figure because I actually like the design, right? So, you know, that's me. Instead of opening another can of worms, I'll just go ahead. Please forgive me, everybody, if you hate the rating that I give it one way or the other. But the Acolyte winds up with a 1 out of 5 for me. I'll never watch this again.
Yeah, I mean, I was waffling between whether I give it a 0.5-star or a full star. And I guess I'll give it a star. It's just incredibly frustrating. And, you know, I don't like not liking things in Star Wars, because Star Wars is a franchise that I love dearly. you know? Like, we do this Star Wars podcast, and we've talked about it on the 602 Club for years. It's what brought us together as friends, literally.
Correct.
You know, I've now got John Concia's Star Wars tattoo. And
so, welcome to the club, brother.
Yeah.
There you go.
And so that's how much I love this series, right? But yeah, this just didn't work for me. And that's okay. You know, if people love it, that's great. More power to you, I guess. But it doesn't work for me on, and this is weird but and strange, but it's like it literally works on zero levels for me, which is really hard to do. So, hopefully, you know, we got Skeleton Crew coming up here in December, and hopefully that works on every level for us.
Although, let's make a special note. I think both of us, I think it bumps it up to a one star for you and probably secures it as one star for me. The score is really good for this.
It was excellent. I loved the score, actually. All the references to things from the prequels and stuff, I loved. I actually really enjoyed the score, except for maybe the song by the witches. Could probably do it.
I said the score.
Yes.
Not the soundtrack.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. The score.
Anyway.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. John, if people wanted to catch up with you, see what else is going outside of your life and watching Star Wars, where would they find you?
Keep up with my presidential campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Kessel Junkie on Twitter.
I'm on board for this campaign, X. So I'm you ready. Know, let's do it.
I'm the most honest candidate that you will ever come across.
Trust me on that. At least of one. Those that are running, yes. So
yes. So go ahead and write in Kessel Junkie in your ballots. You won't be sorry. And you can, of course, find me over on the Nerd Party Network on Aggressive Negotiations, which you're listening to or maybe have heard about now because of the 602 Club, and also on a show called House Lights, where we look at the work of directors, and as we record this, are plodding our way through Oliver Stone's 3+ hour biopics to talk about those, some of them better than others. But Matt, of course, where can people find you?
Well, you know, when I'm not trying to follow the market on Kessel Coin as you run for, you know, president, you can find me all over the place on social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you can find me doing a bunch of other shows as well as on the Nerd Party Network. When I wasn't doing Aggressive Negotiations, I used to do Owlpost with Dre Kaufman, as we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and may the force be with you. And John, I think it's time to close these negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed. ¶¶